The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
I'm happy that Howard said that he needed things shortened and that he didn't need his trousers let out.
Quite to the contrary, I have to tell you. Quite to the contrary.
It's because I'm hoping still to grow, so I leave still length in the cut.
Right, exactly. You don't cut those trousers.
Don't cut them.
Right, exactly.
We're hoping on your behalf, half hour.
All right. So Security Services released for publication the details of an operation by Shin Bet that prevented a major terror attack being perpetrated in Jerusalem. What do we know about this?
So what we know is that during the month of June, so this is already more than a month that has gone by since this particular operation was launched, but we know that it was all focused in Hebron, and that besides the fact that there were explosives involved and that it seems as if though there was a particular threat to Jerusalem, explosive charges were found ready. A laboratory was uncovered in Hebron. Individuals were found to have been in contact with Hamas in the Gaza Strip with specific instructions to carry out kidnappings, shootings, stabbing attacks, to purchase weapons, to recruit others to be involved in terror attacks. So these were specific instructions that were being received from Hamas in the Gaza Strip to people who were residing in Hebron. And obviously, this three kilogram explosive device that had dozens of pieces of metal that were attached to it, could clearly have caused a lot of damage, could have killed people, could have really done a lot of damage if it had been allowed to explode in Jerusalem, as was the plan. But I think for me, what's the most interesting thing, two interesting things about all of this, the first of which is the extent to which Hamas from Gaza is really active in recruiting supporters and terrorist activities within the West Bank area, within Judea and Samaria, and in this particular case, within Hebron in particular. They seem to be quite successful. They have ways of communicating with these people, of encouraging them to recruit others alongside them, to work with them, to divide them up into smaller teams. They seem to somehow have access to explosive devices. They have the ability to set up small factories which ultimately produce these explosive devices. So there is a lot of communication going on between Hamas in the Gaza Strip and various cells that they seem to be setting up, Hamas-supporting cells that they're setting up within the Judean Samaria, within the West Bank. And there seems to be a lot of communication and support between them, which is a very, very concerning development. And obviously, Israeli intelligence is working very hard to intercept these communications and to intercept any attempts to carry out terror attacks. So that's the first thing that I found to be quite interesting, is this coordination that's going on between Gaza and the West Bank. The second thing is that there were specific instructions issued by Hamas to the cell operating from Hebron to carry out attacks against Palestinian Authority targets. And that for me is kind of taking things a step further. I mean, we do know that Hamas and Fatah, which is really the party that runs the Palestinian Authority, we know that they're at loggerheads with each other. We know that they disagree with each other. We know that there's a lot of infighting going on between the various Palestinian factions. But I have not yet to date come across a situation where a terror cell has been specifically instructed to carry out a terror attack against Palestinian Authority targets. And I think that this creates a whole new set of circumstances where potentially the Palestinian Authority and Israel are going to be cooperating a lot more in order to counter the threat that is posed by Hamas from Gaza. And so this is just, you know, another interesting development about Iran's involvement in the region and about the way in which Hamas is operating from Gaza. I know that, you know, this all takes us back to the days when Israel decided to withdraw from Gaza. And there are a lot of questions about the decision that was taken, whether that was the right decision or not. And now that we see this Hamas enclave having been established which really supports terrorism, not only against Israeli targets, but now, as we see, also against Palestinian Authority targets. The question is, where does this begin and end? And, you know, it does bring into question the decision to withdraw from Gaza. So all in all, I think that the Israeli security services are doing an amazing job of intercepting these particular issues, these communications, the threats that we find. And one could just imagine what kind of havoc could have been caused in Jerusalem if this attack had been allowed to continue.
Absolutely. And what's incredible is the extent that that Iran is continuing to destabilize the region. Police have recommended indicting a Deputy Minister, Health Minister Yaakov Litzman, on charges of corruption. What are the details of the police recommendation?
So again, a very, very sad story with a senior politician really coming under scrutiny for inappropriate behavior in his position as a minister in government, or in his case, a deputy minister in government. And he has already for some time been associated with the case of Malka Leifa, who is a lady who is wanted on charges of sexual misconduct in Australia. And she fled from Australia when it became clear that she was facing no fewer than 74 charges of child sex abuse, having been the head teacher of a religious school in Australia and having allegedly perpetrated all kinds of inappropriate behavior against children at the school. She then fled Australia, and she's been in Israel since then. And there have been attempts to extradite her. The Australian authorities have been working with the Israeli authorities to try to extradite her so that she can face those charges. She was actually arrested in Israel in 2014, but has then been released after being deemed mentally unfit for the legal proceedings. And apparently that assessment was being undertaken by the Health Ministry. And according to the charges that the police have laid or are alleging against Deputy Health Minister Litzman, he became personally involved in this case by trying to influence members of the Health Ministry as to how they should find Malka Leifa in terms of the assessment of her mental ability to face these charges. And apparently he had specifically put pressure on the Jerusalem district psychiatrist into falsely stating that Leifa was mentally unfit to be extradited to Australia to stand trial. As things stand at the moment, Malka Leifa has not been extradited to Australia, and there is no doubt that Litzman's involvement has been very, very influential in the decision not to extradite her to Australia. That particular case is not yet over by any stretch of the imagination, but it's very, very sad that the Deputy Health Minister and the leader of the ultra-Orthodox party is the one who is trying to influence people in order to find in a certain way to try to influence their decisions on things which are really, really serious and important, and that really should not have outside influence. And in addition to that, there have been allegations of Litzman trying to influence other members of the Health Ministry to help various food factories that were under Health Ministry investigation to try to help the owners of those factories to keep the factory running, even though the Health Ministry officials were minded to close the factory down because apparently the conditions in the factory did not meet the standards that are laid down by the Ministry of Health. And yet the deputy minister was trying to influence the workers in the ministry to find otherwise. And in fact, there is a claim that he even offered them bribes in order to try to help the owner of this factory. So he's facing some really, really serious charges. I'd like to reiterate that all of what I've just said at the moment are simply allegations that have been made against him. Nothing has been proven as yet, but the police feel that the allegations are strong enough that justify him being indicted on these charges. And even though this is unlikely to have any real influence over the election results at all. Of course, the supporters of Litzman, and particularly those from the ultra-Orthodox community, are saying that this is just another attempt to somehow influence the outcome of the election results and to once again interfere with the elections, which will take place in just a little more than a month from now. But, you know, it's very, very unfortunate that we're having to come across these allegations, which have really been milling around the situation.
Well, I was just going to say, what discredits that comment is the fact that this Marco Leifer situation has been going on for way too long. It's an absolute disgrace, and I think it reflects very, very poorly on how on the whole system and how this has played out. The fact that she's been protected, that the victims of this alleged abuse, which are horrific in nature, that she was a principal, a headmistress of a girls' school, of a religious girls' school, and was abusing her, or allegedly abusing her pupils, and this has gone on for years and years and years, and they can't find peace because she's been protected by various people, I think is absolutely appalling. To then turn around and say, well, it's actually about politics and electioneering, I think discredits it even more. That's my view on this.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think, you know, in the Malka Leifer case, I mean, you know, once again, nothing has been proven in a court of law. And so we need to be quite cautious.
Yes, but she's done everything to evade going to a court of law.
If she's so sure of her innocence, then I think that she should submit herself to go to court and to allow the court to determine exactly what happened there.
You know, it's like Jacob Zuma. It's like Jacob Zuma, who says, you know, I want my day in court to prove my innocence, and then spends the next 15 years trying to avoid going to court. It's slightly disingenuous.
I agree. I mean, I think that the fact that she escaped from Australia, fled to Israel, has been making every effort to avoid being extradited to face the court in Australia, does give an indication that where there's smoke, there's fire. And it certainly has led the general public to conclude that she definitely has a case to answer for some of these things that have been alleged against her. And the fact that Litzman is personally involved in protecting her is, of course, not appropriate. And if, you know, Israel and Australia have an extradition treaty, which I believe they do, then that really needs to play itself out in court rather than have the personal involvement of the Deputy Minister of Health.
Absolutely right. Finally, the Amos 17 satellite was successfully launched overnight from Cape Canaveral.
So this is really good news after unfortunately, a few years ago, we had the situation where Amos 6 did not launch successfully. As a result of that, actually, this company, SpaceX, which has launched the Amos 17, actually decided to give this launch to the Israeli space company for free as a result of that disaster that took place a few years ago, back in September of 2016, when Amos 6 was destroyed in an explosion during the launch test at Cape Canaveral. But fortunately, Amos 17 is in orbit. It has been launched successfully overnight, even though there was a small engine fault that delayed its takeoff by a few days. Ultimately, it has now successfully gone into orbit. Another really positive step for the Israeli satellite industry in general. For people who thought that Amos was just a name that was dreamt up, it's actually a four-letter acronym, which means Affordable Modular Optimized Satellite. I think it's just easier to say Amos.
We'll stick with Amos.
And even though it's been reiterated that this is all about civilian communications and really going to afford civilian communication capabilities within the Middle East and within Africa as well, focused on Northern Africa, I think we could probably safely assume that this is not only about civilian communications. And of course, Israel is very, very much advanced in the use of satellite communications for its military and intelligence activities. And I have absolutely no doubt that Amos 17 is going to be one of the satellites. It's apparently going to be available for the next 20 years of usage. And so this is going to be a very important part of Israel's overall security blanket.
Anthony, before I let you go, Mark says, hi, Anthony. I'm not sure why it was necessary to mention that Litzman is an ultra-Orthodox member. It sounds like Anthony has an axe to grind. I think I can answer that. The answer to that is the fact is it is relevant because the ultra-Orthodox parties are claiming that the allegations against him are because he's ultra-Orthodox. So therefore it's absolutely relevant to the story. Am I correct?
I think it is relevant to the story. And I think the other point about this is that, you know, with the ultra-Orthodox and the religious members of parliament in general, you know, one does naturally have an inclination to expect that they will behave according to Torah law, which is what they put themselves forward to believe in. And so if that is the case, then one has to really question whether there is some sort of clash going on here between what halakha and Torah law would require and some of the things that he's been doing, which, you know, I'll leave that for you to decide upon. Right. But I think that there is some relevance to the story.
It is 8:01. Your news is
no axe to grind.
No, absolutely. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it is 8:01.